The only way to restore Cassim is to undertake a journey to their country?
A journey to Hyperborea, the land of the Arimaspa, is the only possible way of restoring Prince Cassim.
Greetings and well met, travelers. You have found your way to Dragonreel, a magical journey to the realm of fantasy movies.
Welcome to the Dragonreel podcast. This is episode 33. We are going to talk about a movie called Sinbad and the Eye of the Tiger. I am known for my gentleness with females of the species. I'm Chris.
Sorry.
And a normal podcaster would have attacked its reflection thinking it was another podcaster, but not Pete.
Nope, not me.
Oh my gosh.
And as you know, for Pete, I would risk my life, but for her, I would give it. It's Sharon.
Oh, you would?
Yes.
You'd give it?
I would. Well,
that's... No, you wouldn't.
I'd lease it out, maybe.
Oh, wow. I love that line. That was a great line.
You'd give at least 50% of it. Yeah. Maybe 60.
And we dream of his roasted sheep's eyes. It's Matt. Welcome back, Matt.
Hey, thanks for having me out again.
Wait, does that mean we're going to eat his eyes, or he makes roasted sheep eyes?
I don't know.
I'm confused.
Does Matt have sheep eyes? Because you might want to get that corrected.
Maybe I considered it more doe eye.
But maybe he just cooks sheep eyes or something that
maybe he does
is like sheep's eyes, because I know Matt's a cook.
May I say, Sharon, you have the Kathleen Turner whiskey and cigarettes thing going on.
I do. Is it okay? I mean,
so it's totally fine. It's a little sultry.
One of the reasons that it has taken so long to come back to the show is because we have all had one sickness or another.
Oh my God!
In series for the last 2.5 months.
It has been a terrible, terrible season.
Oh, my God. It's kicked my ass. And I didn't even get the flu. I didn't get a flu shot. I didn't get the flu, but I got 3 colds.
Yeah.
Ditto. 3 colds, 2 months. That's not right.
You know, I actually exaggerated. I got 2 colds, so you actually got me beat.
I actually started with the stomach flu. Not the flu I got the shot for. And then I had 3 consecutive colds.
Oh, man.
Wow, but guys, getting back to this great movie.
So actually, I want to start the show by asking for
this
a favor.
Was my choice, sure.
Yeah, I want to ask our viewers for a favor, or listeners for a favor. We don't have viewers because there's no visual. Hey, I'm winging this. I actually want to know what you listeners think, and I would like to hear from you. If you could email us at dragonreelpodcast@gmail.com. What do you want to hear more of? What do you want to hear less of? What did we miss? What aren't we saying? If you listen to a show and you feel like, hey, there's a conversation going on and we're ignoring you, well, first of all, that's how podcasts work. I'm sorry.
Oh, my gosh. If you think I'm right,
really, but if
please
you really
tell me.
Feel like there's something you can add to the conversation, please email us and we will acknowledge it in the next episode.
If you want more romance, just say, I agree with Sharon.
And if you want less romance and more blood and guts, say, I agree with Pete.
But the real favor I need to ask is for as many of our listeners as can, go to iTunes and give our podcast a review, because that helps more people discover us and it will get the word out. And all of the other podcast feeds tend to use the iTunes algorithm for suggesting podcasts to other people. So if you can give us a review, be honest, give us a 5-star review, you know, honestly. And,
oh, I can't believe they don't have gold pieces for us.
I know, right?
I'm so hurt.
You know what? If you give us a review and then email us to tell us which review is yours, I am going to enter you into a drawing to win this $25 Barnes & Noble gift card that I have in my hand. I will just send you the numbers, of course. And I'm going to get everybody who writes a review by March 21st, 2019, into one drawing. And if there's only one person in the drawing, fantastic. You win it. But if you send us a review or write us a review and send me an email saying, hey, this name on here, this is my review. Well, the first person to claim a review, of course, is going to be getting credit for that. But we will announce the winner. The first show we do after March 21st, 2019. That is the beginning of spring.
Oh, yes.
And you know, if you are able to use the Barnes & Noble website online in America, you can use this. I don't care where you live. You're going to get this number. And if you want the physical card to go and go to a Barnes & Noble to use that card, then by all means.
Excellent.
I will mail it to you.
Yeah.
Did we say that we were doing Sinbad today?
Now on with the show.
yes, we said we were doing Sinbad in the Eye of the Tiger. And Sinbad. I even refrained from going, it's the thrill of the fight.
Right.
And you didn't, it's
really hard not to.
Oh, my God.
Like, through the whole movie? We're going like, dun, 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 dun.
All right, but especially when did every single fight scene.
But when did you realize that the subtitle was there for that reason?
To do what?
I mean, so it's like the Eye of the Tiger, so you're waiting for the tiger to show up, right?
Right. When,
and it, for me, it wasn't until the very last scene I was like, and that's why it's called that.
Oh, yeah.
And, well, I thought it was because Zenobia's eyes turn into cat's eyes.
Yeah.
Okay.
I did not realize that. I went through the whole movie going, where's the tiger? Like, the saber-toothed
tiger. Where's the tiger?
Right.
Yeah, so here's the thing. No, here's the thing about that. Her eyes turn into cat's eyes, but when she turns into a cat, the cat has normal round pupil eyes.
I know. I noticed that.
I did too.
So it's kind of a trick, really.
Well, you see, that's the problem with magic like hers, dealing mostly in alchemy, is the fact that you have these imperfect transformations.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you know, we should ask Pete to summarize this movie.
I think since Pete chose this one, we should have him.
Yes.
Sum up.
So I agree. Be it. I will be paraphrasing an excellent synopsis by Martin H. Buddha. Sinbad, in order to win the hand of his princess love, must deliver her brother, a prince, transformed into a baboon, to the lands of the Adamaspi, to restore him to his human form in time for his coronation. On the way, he must contend with the evil witch Zenobia, her son, their magic, and several nasty-looking Ray Harryhausen beasties.
Okay.
I agree.
I...
That's a good summary.
Okay, you win.
All right.
So, interesting cast here. who I think guess was mostly nobody's then.
Patrick Wayne had been doing a lot of TV. Oh no, she was a nobody. The only film she'd done prior to this was Live and Let Die.
Well, that's not a nothing film, is it?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, she was. You know,
that's a hell of a paycheck, but.
But you know, again, this was her. Name. This is technically her second movie, so. But Patrick Wayne was on TV a lot.
Oh, okay.
So he was known from that. And Terron Power, I'm not sure what she had done prior. But, yeah, pretty much everybody else, you know, there were a couple people like Patrick Troughton, who was fairly well known to British audiences.
Pete,
probably somebody like Bernard Kay or somebody like that.
I'm glad you picked this one.
Why is that?
Because, to me, this one was really what our podcast is about. It was, I thought this one was a true fantasy movie, and it made me think that I really want to play 5th edition D&D.
Neat. Well, yeah, and it is, and for me, it's a lot of fun because it combines, it's so anachronistic in so many ways, and there's such a melange of different cultures involved that I adore it for its sheer fantasy-ness.
Yes. Right.
I mean, at least, you know, we've got the Prince of Persia, where they tried to keep everything thematic and, you know, roughly the same time period. I mean, they failed, but...
And fairly whitewashed, yeah.
Right, and whitewashed. But here, they didn't care about that. They're not going for historical accuracy or to keep everything in the same time period.
Why would they? It's a Sinbad story.
Right.
I think saying they didn't care is probably sums up this movie pretty damn well. It was like, and then, like, Trog the Light. Why is he a Trog the Light? Why does he have a horn?
Trog
the
Light?
Yeah.
You know, it was just...
You gotta realize that Harryhausen had his own fingers in that mix.
Yes.
Really. And that's what he was going for. He wanted something big and spectacular, and Beverly Cross, I think, kind of...
I was actually just reading about that his movies, he couldn't be listed as the director, but he pretty much was the director from the point on, which definitely gave the feeling on this one, because it was like, there's no story, it's just he wants to do the next creature, and then we're moving to it, however...
Oh, it's not just that, he wants to throw in as many fantastical elements as he possibly can. Right. He's all about that.
And that's the whole point of the movie. There is no other real point to this thing, and, you know, it's just... Fine if they age well, and the effects did not age well at all. So.
I think for stop motion, it was very, very good, but we just don't do that anymore.
Right.
Oh, no. And that's the thing, is that this was him with his second biggest budget. The next one was Clash of the Titans in 1981.
Okay.
And that's, you know, you get to see... This was, what, like a $3.5 million budget, which was huge for Harryhausen.
It was huge for 1977.
And then Clash was $15 million, which was his biggest budget. And you can tell. I mean, it's blended a lot better than this movie is.
This movie, though, did kind of work for me, being blind, because I couldn't see the bad special effects. I'm just saying that.
Oh, again, it's not terrible. Like Chris said, it's great for stop motion. Or, as he put it, dynamation. But, yeah, that's Harryhausen's copyright.
Right, that was his trademark name, yeah.
Yeah, but the
problem is it kind of takes you out when you see the gaps in the goodness.
Yes.
When you see, explain what you mean by
so it's
when
kind
you
of
can
like
see
the uncanny
the
valley
the
for CGI effects, where like something that looks right but not quite kind of makes you uneasy and like uncomfortable. I mean, it wasn't really like that, but it did kind of like highlight the fact that what you're looking at isn't really there. And I had especially with the troglodyte, I had a really hard time figuring out the scale, because when they first showed him, they split the screen in such
sizes.
A way
that's what you told
that,
me.
That he looks like, enormous.
He looks like a 25-foot tall giant standing over the hill. You know?
Yeah.
And when they showed him in the next segment, you know, only being about 7 feet tall, I'm like, wait a minute.
Well, closer to 10, but yeah, I see what you mean.
Okay, did anybody notice how they use the women in this movie? Like,
Can I interject here and just say that this should have been named Dione in the Eye of the Tiger, because that woman was the workhorse of this film.
Yeah,
she really carried a lot of it.
She drove the plot more often than anybody else, and the only two people who worked as hard were Hassan and Maruf.
Yeah. But it was like, do you remember when they faced the troglodyte and they sort of, they're like, let the women deal with him. I was like, what the hell?
It's a caveman. Let's fuck off and let the women deal with it.
Let's throw
not only
some...
That, but Lanthius' go-to is Dione, take care of this.
Yes.
That's true.
Yeah. Well, no, because he discovered it with his telepathia. Let's not forget the telepathia. Right.
The telepathia.
Oh, yeah.
Telepathia, thank you.
Yeah, I got it right here.
Melanthius will see you.
But how did you...
My father taught me. He calls it telepathia, a Greek word for communication of the mind.
But she did it with a straight acting voice.
Yeah. She sold it with a good.
I lost it at that scene. Telepathia.
Right.
It's just so cute. Like that and baboon. It's the baboon. However, I can't mispronounce it the way they mispronounced it.
Yes, a baboon.
Yeah. Oh my God. Patrick Troughton must have tore his vocal cords up for this movie.
I don't know what you mean by that.
Every time he talks, he's speaking like this.
Yes, of course.
I'm yelling. I don't know why. I'm Robin Leach.
I'm trying to get in my emphasis. Turn Power and Margaret Whiting, though, did not dial in their performances. They were on board from word go, and that's what kind of made this movie for me.
I kind of felt like Zenobia was kind of not taking it seriously.
I felt like Melanthius wasn't taking it seriously. I felt like she was doing it just a great job of playing like a chewing the set's villain.
Oh yeah,
like an outlandish fantasy villain. I think that's what she was going for, and it worked like crazy.
She deserves an Oscar just for her first scenes, pulling them off with just her eyes.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I can move fire with my eyes.
I can create demon type things from deep in the earth by sprinkling some Boone's Farm strawberry wine and.
Okay, did anyone notice the very unusual scene? When she was on the boat, because I'm sorry, I can't remember her name.
Zenobia.
Yeah, absolutely. When she turned into the bird, I thought she was, like, doing something.
Having an orgasm.
Yes! Yes, was it supposed to be that? I'm just wondering.
I don't know.
Sure, her son was watching her. And
I know, that's why just, I thought it was weird. Yeah.
It was just awkward, that's all.
It was just really awkward.
It was
awkward.
One of those awkward moments where you're like,
probably
what
happened was,
should I come back?
Wanamaker said to her, I want you to go higher and higher pitch so when we transform you into a bird, it turns into a screeching
like,
bird.
Rah! Okay, sorry.
So,
But
I think that's what they were trying to go for, but
that's what they were
that's
going
what they got.
For.
Yeah,
and then use some of the worst stock photos or photo, you know, images ever, like the seagulls flying around.
Seagull.
Like,
yes.
That's definitely a different bird that just landed. And they're like, and then they're like, right. Oh yeah, and then she had that necklace.
Oh yeah.
And like,
also, suddenly the necklace comes back there. In the next scene. Yeah. Yeah.
And then it's gone, and then it's back.
I'm going to fly off into some stock footage now.
My favorite part is when Zabib, the one-eyed guard.
Yeah.
That his eye patch keeps changing.
Oh yeah, I kept flipping back and forth.
I've always loved that part. I remember back being like 10 years old when this came out and watching it and going, something's wrong with his eye patch.
Right. Wasn't your eye patch on the other eye? What patch?
Yeah.
What do you mean? Well, go ahead, Pete.
No, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, I love romance, so I really liked the romantic parts, and I adore Jane Seymour, so I.
Which is funny for me, because to me she's the weakest part of this film.
Really?
Okay.
I thought it was the writing, though.
Performance wise or character wise?
Yeah, I was gonna.
Performance wise, I think she couldn't. It was like somebody wrote the words "shrinking violet" on the inside of her trailer, and told her to concentrate on that the whole time.
Oh, but
she didn't have that many lines, though.
Well, I mean, but
no, she didn't. But she spent a lot of time screaming.
I was just going to say that. It was like the Doctor Who companion. Like, she screamed really well. And how much body did you see in the swimming scene?
In the swimming scene? Oh, you saw most of her body.
A fair amount.
Yeah.
I was going to say, there's more nudity than I would expect from a G film.
Yeah.
Is it G?
I mean, I'd be happy about it. It was G.
Neat.
Wow.
No wonder I saw it when I was 10.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys knew that Minotaur, when they were standing next to Minotaur and he was actually in the scene, that was Peter Mayhew?
I didn't
know that because I read the trivia.
Oh, yes. Okay. I only know that because I read the trivia.
he had a big year, 77.
Yeah.
That was his intro right there. So this was his first filming, and then he went straight from this to Lucas.
I liked the music in this. I just said apropos of nothing.
Yeah. I was going to talk about the time that Pete and I got in an elevator and Peter Mayhew was in it.
Was he?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That really happened.
And Chris nudged me and I went, Chewbacca. And Peter Mayhew went,
did he really?
Yes,
he did. But the weirdest thing is, like, I walked into the elevator and, like, he's got a walking stick shaped like a lightsaber.
Yes.
Oh. And it was like, his walking stick was, like, up to my chin.
Oh, yeah.
He's a big man.
He's a big, big man.
Oh, I wish I could have met him.
Yeah. That was really the convention where I got to be your con daddy.
Yep.
Yeah. I also wish I could meet Jane Seymour. And she would probably say that this was
if she would come to conventions, you'd get to meet her.
Movies.
What else has she done that's fantasy? Because all I can think of is Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman.
Yeah, that's pretty fantastical. I don't know. I'm not that big of a Jane Seymour fan, so I wouldn't. I mean,
oh my God, hush!
Sorry.
Oh, you know what? The time travel one. The time travel.
Time after time.
She did do that.
Oh.
Was it somewhere in time or time after time?
Was it somewhere in time?
I think it was somewhere in time.
I think it's just in time.
Somebody look it up.
But I'm looking it up now.
Holy crap! She's got a lot of credits.
I really liked that one.
Not to be confused with the Iron Maiden album of the same name,
East of Eden.
Somewhere
God, I loved her in East of Eden.
Her and
she was amazing in that. Amazing.
Amazeballs.
There are scenes that I saw when I was a little girl, and I still remember her from that.
Oh, she had a lot of TV credits.
She was in the original. I forget she was in the original Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, I forgot that too.
Mm. Now, there's some. You know, in February 2018, she posed for Playboy for a third time at the age of 67 to be the oldest woman photographed in the magazine.
So far.
Very cool.
So far.
What'd you say?
Wait another 20 years. She'll go again.
Chris, there's nothing wrong with that.
I completely agree.
You know, I mean, like, you know, I wish her all the luck for real.
You're here.
I mean. Totally.
Yeah. So this did anybody see the gross of this movie? See what it made?
Well, tell us, Chris. I want to know now.
It says 20 million, but I think that's US, and that's pretty good for a $3.5 million movie.
Oh yeah.
In 1977.
Definitely.
So, I mean, it was not a disappointment. So a lot of people at the time went and saw this.
Well, it was action-packed.
Yeah, and the previous film was so popular that they started working on this one while it was still in theaters.
Oh, really?
So it really was slapdash and really hurriedly put together. I know, hard to believe. But, yeah, I know.
Well, again, they wanted to get John Philip Law, who was Sinbad in the Golden Voyage, to reprise his role, but he couldn't, due to conflict, he could not do the role.
And so they got Patrick Wayne,
whom
I have never seen in anything else that I'm aware of.
Really? You never saw Her Alibi?
No.
Huh.
Was he big?
He was a consistent character actor on TV shows.
Okay.
So especially in the 70s. I remember him on things like The Love Boat, Fantasy Island, stuff like that, you know?
The Love Boat.
Soon we'll be making another run.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So you guys told me tonight that he was John Wayne's son.
Yes.
Which I did not know.
Yes.
That's kind of awesome.
Yeah.
So he probably grew up acting and having a lot of experiences. And
he's hit from one of the first things I remember him in, he's in The Quiet Man with his papa.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know. Cool. I think being John Wayne's son would be, you know, you're in a pretty big shadow.
Right.
And then you're like, and then I was a TV actor. Like, oh, good on you. Then how many Oscars did you get?
Oh, well, I think that's why he stuck to TV, is because he didn't want to be constantly compared to his dad.
Maybe.
You know?
Yeah, well,
he's not that strong of an actor, so it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, yeah.
He didn't become anything like the household name that John Wayne did.
So. I did love how all the accents were all over the place on this one.
Oh my god! I could not figure out what that was about.
It's a bunch of cultures.
Yeah, I thought you liked that, Sinbad, Chris.
Sinbad and his people are clearly, you know, Muslims, but you know the fact that Melanthius is still around would mean that would have to be 600 years prior.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
and things like the Amerispy and stuff like that. Yeah.
I don't think any two people had the same accent. So,
no, true.
I mean, even Terran Power didn't have the same accent from scene to scene.
No, true.
Zenobia came in with a Russian accent. I think she was trying to do a sort of, you know, theatrical Middle Eastern accent, but it came out completely Russian. So Zenobia's accent was kind of like
all over the place.
Yeah, it was crazy. Who was the vizier there?
I never understood who was related to who, and who was the king.
I think that's Basira. But oh, sorry, Belsara. No, Belsara was the one who gets. Yeah, no, isn't that Belsara?
Oh, it must have been Zabid.
I thought Zabid was the captain of the guard.
Oh my god! Oh, you're right. Yeah. So I don't know. So like everybody was.
I think Belsara is the.
Yeah. So like it was hard to tell what people's job was. Like in that opening scene when I didn't know who anybody was, I'm like trying to explain to Sharon what's going on. I'm like, okay, there's people.
There are a lot of people.
Somebody's squinting. Somebody's watching. Somebody's smiling.
Yeah. The beginning was very weird. I was.
And then Zenobia showed up later on, and I'm like, I think that's this person.
There's also a moment where there's like it looks like there might be guys ready to assassinate the prince.
Yes.
Like it shows a guy like resting his hand on his dagger, and a couple of guys looking a little shifty, and all this other stuff. So it was like, oh, courtly intrigue. Nope.
Right. Well, I think the whole movie was a conspiracy to keep Kasim from having any lines at all.
Pretty much.
Because he was turned into a baboon.
He finally gets to say something at the very end.
He was hired to be pretty. That's why.
And he's a very beautiful man.
He is a very beautiful man. He's very striking.
But he only gets to say, let's see. One of two lines here.
Master Melanthius, he made it all possible.
How shall I ever thank you?
It's an old debt repaid.
So yeah, they kept him to a minimum there.
Mm. Yeah, and Melanthius didn't really do anything. That was at the very end where like the son, you know, Zenobia's son goes to fight him, you know, and she's like, kill Melanthius. They're like, why? Wait, also, first of all, why didn't you just have an explosion at the beginning instead of turning him to a baboon?
Yeah.
We wouldn't have a movie.
I know we wouldn't have a movie, but it was just one of the more, it's one of the, you know, the plot did definitely serve, like, hey, you know, I want to have a baboon in this. Right. So, well, honestly, let's, you know, a perfectly good explosion. No, let's have him transform into a baboon.
Right, and they have to tell you the rules very clearly.
Mm-hmm.
This is the plot.
Prince Kasim. His crown before the passing of seven moons, he will lose forever his right to be caliph.
Wait, why?
But why? Just change that.
Yeah. I don't know.
There's no caliph to change it.
It's written in stone. I don't know. But, you know, after the beginning, I kind of got into it.
And they also say why they can't kill Zenobia. When the princess, like, tries to stab Zenobia, he says, no, if any member of the royal family spills any blood, then there will be a curse on our house forever.
Ah.
So he says, this is why we can't just do that.
That's why she doesn't blow him up.
Yeah,
because she doesn't want to be cursed.
Oh, there you go. See, none of us even got that, but there you go.
That's why there's no blood spilled.
So there's no blood spilled because there'd be a curse on her house.
Right, exactly.
Ah. Right. See, well, we just figured it out. So see, with some thought, it does make sense.
Yep. And we got some melodrama later on.
Not a lot. Not a lot of thought.
We got some thought. I love this musical cue. I back the movie up and listen to this 3 times.
There is no one to prevent it.
Melanthius will prevent it.
Melanthius is a myth.
Melanthius will prevent it.
Yeah. I like the interchange between those two.
Who two?
The one you just played.
Oh, Jane Seymour and
yes.
And Zenobia?
Yeah. When she had lines, her lines were just fine. But they didn't give her a lot of lines. From when they got onto the ice, she didn't, you know, from that point on.
Oh, she was just set dressing at that point.
Yeah. But it was,
and I got to give them credit. They, you know, when she's there, like the guy's like, she must be cold, and gave her his jacket. Yeah. And like, that's the most authentic moment. And I think the whole film, like they were like, you know, I bet this ice cavern's cold.
Yeah.
Here, have my jacket.
Was it really ice?
Well, it was paper mache.
No. Okay. No. I didn't know because I couldn't see it.
Oh, no, no. It was... not the best ice I've ever seen in a movie. Yeah. It looked like a saran wrapped tiger.
Oh my god!
Some of it was it was just really weirdly like.
How is the
look
creature
at that?
That...
And go, why are we okay with this?
How is the creature that came out of the icy water?
Oh, very, very much. The giant walrus.
Yeah, the giant walrus.
One of the better beasties.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Because there's a lot of snow falling.
Yes.
In the foreground.
Yes.
So it masks a lot of the bad.
Yeah.
But for the time period, was it good?
Oh, yeah.
For the year that it was done in?
Yes, it was. But then that was the same year Star Wars happened. So,
right.
You know, it just happened to hit that right. Like, for anything from 76, it would have been spectacular. Mm-hmm. And then Star Wars happened the same year. And then, like, no, it does. Star Wars effects hold up. Like,
right.
These do not.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I mean, yeah. You would agree, right?
Yeah,
Chris?
Star Wars was definitely the... Actually, 2001 was really the watershed moment for models and miniatures. But nobody really did it well until Star Wars.
Yeah. And they didn't go with the practical effects on this one. So it's, you know, apples and oranges. Mm-hmm. But the practical effects, you know, continued. That evolutionary line continued on. And I think Clash of the Titans was where stop motion died for a long time.
It wasn't so much that it died, it just went immediately to children's fare.
Yeah.
Right. TV shows and small, you know, short movies and things
like that. The Ewoks movie, I think, had a fair amount of stop motion in it. So, you know, bring Lucas back into it.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. And then when Jurassic Park hit in 93, we never saw miniatures or models again. It was just all CG.
Yeah.
So would it be better with CGI?
If they were to remaster this with CGI, I mean, the problem is you'd still have the same kind of the plot, which is...
Well, it's not just the plot, it's also the fact that you've got people, when they're looking at one place, are not looking at exactly the same place.
Right.
So
what was your favorite scene, Chris?
Why are you asking me first? So I thought there were a lot of times...
she got it in first, Chief.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There were a lot of times when they did do the layers very well.
Mm-hmm. Tell us one of the times that you...
I think there was one where they were at the gate and the trog was there and the baboon was there and all the people were there. And I was like, yeah, okay, I'm believing this particular frame. You know, this particular shot.
When they were going into the
temple?
I mean,
as far as, like, effects go... Yeah, when they were going into Hyperborea.
Okay.
Well, No, the temple in the middle. The place with the doors.
Okay, the place with the doors.
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought the layers there were really, really good. I don't know if that's my favorite scene dramatically.
What about the construct rowing the boat?
My favorite scene was when Minotaur got buried by a rock, and Zenobia was like, fuck him.
Yeah, he's done. We put a portion of gold into his heart, but hey, you know, right. Whatever.
Yeah, I mean, he's the fighter here. He's the one with the spear who can, yeah. And then the heroes stop and look and they go, poor Minotaur.
That's kind of a shame.
I don't think they even encountered him at all, did they?
Nope.
No, the guards got killed by him.
So they made of this I kept waiting for the showdown between Minotaur and Troglodyte, which is a weird sentence to say.
Yeah. But that would have been cool. I was actually waiting for that too, Matt. So
yeah.
I kind of see what you're saying.
I think it's interesting that the one brick that she chose to destroy had the actual arch doorway behind it.
That's because she knows these things, man. Right. She's clearly a sorceress. But I have to say, if they had fought, then Trog would never have gotten the spear.
True.
Yeah.
Maybe he used to kill the saber-toothed guy.
Which is probably my favorite scene, actually. I think that was the best done scene, was the fight between Troglodyte and Sabretooth Tiger. Because, there was actually, he was scratching him and, biting, and there was blood, and, it sounds really morbid when I say it out loud, that was some actual technical, that was, a cool fight.
Yeah, then he got killed and his body disappeared.
Oh, I didn't even notice.
No. He de-rezzed. Come on.
He de-rezzed. He respawned back in the waterfall.
Exactly. Did you see that? He kept reminding me of something. I couldn't figure out what it was, but they apparently reused the Troglodyte as an action figure in Clash of the Titans.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And I was like, I knew I recognized that from somewhere. So, yeah, apparently he was that was the form that they used for one of the action figures.
That's cool.
So,
interesting. Yeah,
not really at all, but thank you for saying that. I appreciate it.
No, it's a nice little piece, because that was something Harryhausen's famous for, is reusing things for other things.
Yeah, oh yeah.
So what about you, Pete?
And Pain by the Tentacle.
I don't know about that.
Oh, it's, he.
Oh,
he
that charged... might have been from the from the critter from Jason and the Argonauts.
Something like that. I think which one it was, an octopus that had six legs, because he was like, well, eight legs will cost you this, and they're like,
right,
six
exactly.
Legs is good.
No, six is fine.
Nice. It's a sectopus.
Yeah, exactly.
So what about your favorite scene or portion of a scene, Pete?
I'm pretty much sold on any scene that Zenobia's in. But I have two scenes that really, really stand out for me. One is when the princess looks at her and goes, Melanthius will solve this. And she turns around and she gives this snake-eyed look, and she does this side-to-side look real quick, and she goes, but Melanthius is a myth,
Yeah.
Kind of thing, and I just love that moment, screw, that might actually solve this. Damn it. And then my other favorite one is when she's shrunk herself, and Sinbad says, be careful, remember she's a witch and dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah. And then she goes,
so what, she's gonna bite him on the hand?
Let me go! Don't!
That's it. That's it. Yep. Don't hold me! Fantastic. But the fact that he's so sold on the supernatural powers that it's like, be careful.
Yeah.
Oh, this was my favorite conversation. There was two characters that had this conversation.
Come on, for real.
My favorite goof in that, though, is when they're it's like, it's a mad bee. No, it's a mosquito. No, it isn't. There's no proboscis. It's a bee.
No, it's a wasp.
Oh, that's true, because it has no hair.
Yeah. It started out as a bee. When it was small, it was a bee, but when it grew, it was a wasp.
I think technically introduces it as a hornet.
Yeah.
So...
That was also one of the worst moments of serving the desire to get to the wasp, the giant wasp. He's like, this little thing could kill you. It can kill a man normal. Let's dip it in the growing solution.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
A genius.
Don't
you were the genius that we've been hunting for?
Don't do that.
Come on. I mean, and you could see it coming a mile away.
Absolutely.
See, to be Melanthius fair, doesn't do the stuff. He finds the people who do the stuff. He's the producer.
But it's not that he's the producer. He's also the mad scientist. He created a laser.
Yeah,
he's got a death ray.
Yeah.
He lives on a small island surrounded by cannibals, and he has a death ray.
And let's not forget the key that was brought in, and then he's just like, I guess I don't need this key anymore.
Yep.
Yeah, I didn't.
Well, there was
that.
A big pile outside the temple of things. I decided, fuck that thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Trav's like, oh, I no longer need club. I have spear now.
Right. So you had a key, a club, and a Minotaur outside where people just went, eh.
Yeah.
What is it? Sharon, what about your favorite scene?
Okay. I like the bits about the baboon losing his intelligence over time. So I think he was playing chess
He was playing chess with Melanthius later on.
Melanthius.
No, with Dione.
And with Dione. I guess I liked some of that stuff. And
when he scattered the board, that was with the... I don't know if it was Dione or Dione, because they keep changing it.
Well, it depends on who says it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
But Melanthius keeps saying Dione.
I think she said Dione.
Yeah, they did change it. But I just, you know, I'm always about the romance. So I liked how she could kind of bring out in him his kind of remember that he was still...
Maybe she just liked
human.
That he was a baboon.
No.
Maybe she had like a furry thing.
And I think you already played my favorite line when the... when our hero is talking to... Oh, I can only think Jane Seymour. What's her name in the movie?
Isn't she Princess Farah?
Princess Farah. Farah.
Farah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you played it. And it's just so romantic. And how he talks about like how he wasn't ready before... to settle down, but now he is.
Okay.
I just, you know, that was kind of sentimental and sweet.
It was also a very sweet scene when he says, you know, I'd give my life for him, or I'd what was it? I'd give my life for him.
Yeah. It's this.
Trust me my brother's sake.
Yes.
For him, I would risk my life. For you, I would give
he's
it.
Bam!
Sexy the way he says it.
So in. He is so in with that line.
I went, whoa. I mean, like, that's... And he seemed to mean it. I wonder if they had a thing going on at the time.
I don't know.
The actors.
Like me and Mrs. Jones?
No, I mean, I'm just...
Mrs. Jones?
I'm just wondering.
What about you, Matt? What was your favorite scene?
Oh, it was the fight scene.
Yeah, you liked the fight scene, yeah.
For good ones, that fight scene. The, there was just the whole middle section when, I forgot her name was, when she was small and, like, traipsing around, and it was like watching a Tom and Jerry cartoon.
On the boat.
Like,
oh,
and
wait,
the knife
were dropping
fall.
Stuff around her and stuff?
I'm sorry?
When people were dropping stuff around her?
Yeah. When I got to
yeah,
give
I
them credit, they did that the Chekhov's gun right there. Like, oh, they used the knife earlier in the scene, and then it showed up again to kill the wasp. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the other great thing is he just tosses it out the window. Like, and they spent the time to show him, like, I'm done with this.
Yep.
You know, this deadly wasp now with this wonderful poison that I could probably, like, there's so many things you could do with that
we're
in the
already,
story.
We're done with that set
like,
piece.
No, yeah, we use this, done, throw it away.
Well, it's
he's
nice
done
that they did
work.
That because they established the fact that you could throw away things, which is why Minotaur's death wasn't a big deal.
Right.
Yeah, apparently.
Okay.
Making Minotaur was pretty cool, I have to say.
He's done his work.
Yeah, you're right. Forging Minotaur was pretty darn cool.
Yeah, I was like, oh, this is going to be, like, this looks like a legitimate bad guy. I wonder how the heroes will defeat Minotaur.
Yeah.
That didn't happen. There was no payoff to that one.
You don't have to worry about that, because nature took it, or physics
but, you know,
took it.
Right.
I was thinking through the whole
life
movie,
will out in
how the are they going to defeat him?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't think that a regular guy could have stood up to him.
Oh, no,
so...
it would have been...
It would have
been
Matthew
was right. It totally would have been Trog versus Minotaur.
Yeah.
Good thing they wasted him on a door.
So
yeah,
I also like when the witch, when her foot got turned into...
when she didn't turn back all the
way.
Yeah,
I liked that.
Yeah, they forgot about that later on.
Oh, you mean visually?
Yeah.
When
she's running around in the temple, she's got two shoes on. And...
Does she really?
Yeah.
Oh, that...
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, that... Okay.
I had forgotten about that, too.
Little minus there, then, but...
Well, again, it's like I said, it's one of those inconsistencies that plagues this movie.
Yeah.
So.
But it was still a fun romp. And how were the costumes, guys, since I couldn't see them? Were they pretty good?
Dead sexy. I mean, okay. they were pretty well done. Actually, the fact that they had such a variety of Middle Eastern costume in like the opening scene and stuff like that to show that dignitaries had traveled to see the prince court, you know, receive his coronation was kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Or they just raided several of the.
They probably went through to find something
that works.
But you said you saw a zipper on something.
Yeah, Zenobia's dress had a zipper. But,
sure. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not Zenobia. Diane's dress had a zipper.
Okay.
Zipper up the back.
Okay. Oh, you saw it too. Okay.
Oh yeah. No, there are a couple times where it's not very often she's not wearing her long hair down.
Yeah.
But every once in a while it's flipped over her shoulder, and then when she turns around, it's plain as day.
Yeah.
So.
Maybe they could have said, hey, keep your hair there so it covers the zipper.
Well, I'm sure it was like, it's not really something you think about. And, you know, given all of the other, you know, inconsistencies and anachronisms in here, who cares, really?
Right.
Again, it's a fantasy movie. It's supposed to be fantastical in a lot of different ways. So
right.
if we're looking for
realism, you don't watch
historical accuracy.
Right.
Not going to happen.
Right.
That's not going to happen here.
Yeah.
I thought it was pretty fun. I mean, I thought this, okay, the way that they constructed, we're in this scene now, and this is what's going on. And like later on, it's like, well, now this part of the movie is like this theme. And like later on in the movie is this theme. It's like kind of like, I felt kind of like you're going on a D&D adventure. It's like you've got this isolated thing and this isolated
thing. I know where you got
that
from.
Huh.
That's what I said.
Yeah, no, you said it earlier.
And
I don't know if we might not have been recording then.
No, we were.
Oh, we were. Okay.
I think we were.
So it is structured kind of like a D&D game. Or a D&D game
that's
structured
kind of
like this.
I think that might be one of the reasons that I
still like D&D. Set piece to set piece.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get hired for a thing.
Right, and you go on a quest, and you have to go find the wise man. You have to get the map.
Yeah, you have to get help from the person.
Right, you have to get the key
to solve the problem, to go to the place.
That key one day is going to come in handy.
And then there's roadblocks like the walrus in the ice, and then there's a part where you're not sure if you should go through where they went through
the
tunnel.
The walrus in the ice is kind of like the part of the adventure that doesn't really have to do anything. It's like the random encounter.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
But where they almost died.
Yeah.
So
the GM really wanted to use that creature.
Right.
Which I gotta say has happened in plenty of D&D games that I've played in where it's the random monster encounter that's like, oh, we really got beat up at that one.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, we almost died. Wait, we didn't get to the big boss monster yet.
Right,
exactly.
So and then of course the
the puzzle to get into the temple at the end.
Well, I liked that. I liked that. But where they met the troglodyte and I liked the moment of respite. In the land of you know, it was so tropical, and so they get their rest up before the big bad fight, you know, kind of.
And you've got the mission with the timer. You've got 7 days.
Yeah,
and then
he's going to revert to being an animal.
Then they got a second timer, which was him losing his humanity.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So
there were two timers.
Yeah, I don't know if you counted, if you noticed that there were two timers.
I like the fact it wasn't so much that it was two timers. It was the big clock and then the little clock.
Right.
And the little clock is what adds the drama.
Is the little clock him not coming back to himself?
Yeah. It's him losing his humanity.
It's this right here.
Yeah, so that's pretty good.
What did you mean when you said the time was on the side of Queen Zenobia?
Well, you see, the longer the transformation is delayed, the more likely is Cassim to lose those human qualities that still relate to him.
So they
see,
say
I interpreted the seven moons as 7 months, and I'm like, that's a pretty okay, yeah. So that's not a ticking clock. That's a ticking calendar, really.
Yeah,
right. But like I said, that's the big clock. You have to make the operation within that framework.
Yes.
And then to add impetus, you put on the little clock.
Yeah.
So.
I think I interpreted it as 7 days, which made the ridiculous made the timeline of their journey ridiculous.
But if they kept looking at the different phases of the moon.
Okay, if it's 7 months.
Well, you know, I must not be very smart. It's because I didn't get. I thought it was also
7 days.
Or seven. I thought it was actually 7 weeks. So see, you thought 7 days. I thought 7 weeks.
No,
he says 7 months.
What week has multiple? has, you know,
I sat. Didn't I start this whole section with "I'm not very smart"? I just didn't. I didn't get that it was okay.
No, but they even show different phases of the moon during their journey.
Yeah, but I didn't see that part, Pete.
No, I know you didn't, but Chris did, and he could have told you.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I don't know. Maybe I was playing Civ at that point.
kind of watches it, and we shouldn't admit
that.
Fine. That's bad.
No, I was looking down at my paper taking notes about the movie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you weren't really playing another game.
I missed them getting to paradise. I went to go get coffee and I came back and it was like, you know, I was just in another room and I'm like, it's green. They were in the Arctic. Like,
right. Yeah, what happened?
I'm not going to rewind. I don't care. I just know. Like, well, it's okay.
You know, it's, they said they were going to Hyperborea. So that's like another Hollow Earth thing. So,
yeah.
And then they spent more time with the bad guys getting there. Like, and then there's the, you know, which actually that was a pretty cool scene with all the coffins and all that, or the ice coffins. Like, that's a pretty good image.
The catacombs of the Automaspi.
So I had a question about this, the plot. Well, not the plot, but how Sinbad got set off on this journey in the first place.
Okay.
How they tried to poison him. So Sinbad is really close to the royal family. Like, he's best friends with Cassim, and he's in love with the princess, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Zenobia is Cassim's stepmother.
Yes.
Why would Sinbad not know Raffi?
That's maybe he just didn't like him.
It's funny because I think there are moments that Matt pointed out earlier where Harryhausen decided to change what was going on in the script.
Uh-huh.
So I fully believe that Trog and Minotaur were supposed to fight.
Yeah.
And then somebody said, that doesn't make a lot of sense. Why would, you know, why would that be the big fight? Wouldn't there be a guardian at the shrine? And he was like, oh, guardian at the shrine. Right. What the hell are we going to do with Minotaur? We'll drop a block on him. So he's like, you know, when she says, you know, my mother died when I was born, I was like, and he doesn't know that? He's been friends with Cassim?
Right.
You know, that kind of thing. So why wouldn't he even know Zenobia?
Yeah.
If he's best friends with Cassim. So. Yeah.
So Raffi, his best friend's stepbrother,
yeah,
pretends to be some merchant and says, "I'll come and, you know, come into my tent and I'll give you some wine,
and I'll poison you and then summon demons from the deep."
Right.
Yes.
Like you do.
Well, you know, that's how we do it.
Yeah. So I mean, that just struck me as odd. After, so I have really bad facial recognition, and it's not that sort of facial amnesia that people are talking about, but it's like I'm not good at it. So it was like a while before I realized that Raffi was the same guy.
Wait a minute.
Oh, wait, it gets even better because on the previous movie, he played someone on the one of Sinbad's men.
Oh, really?
Kurt Christian, who played one of Sinbad's men on The Golden Voyage, switched sides to play Zenobia's evil son, Raffi. So he really should have recognized him.
That's funny.
Doesn't he? Because he plays a Hassan-like character in Golden Voyage.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, like one of the Sinbad's go-to men. Huh. You know? You know, because usually in every Sinbad movie that I've ever seen, he usually has three go-to guys. Uh-huh. He's got one definite right-hand man, and then he's got two others who are, like, his workhorses.
And how many of them survived till the end?
None of them.
How many survived in this one?
One?
One guy?
One or two, yeah.
No, because Maruf dies.
Does he?
Yeah.
I'll take your word for it. I remember there's two of them, they're wounded, and he's like, he's dead. And then they run before the ice collapse. And I figured that guy lived, but I don't remember their names, so I can't help you.
Oh, no. So Maruf is the black guy.
The black guy, who was used as a step stool.
Right. And he doesn't make it. He's the one who
dies. But he doesn't die first.
But Hassan is the one who makes it out. Hassan's the one who survives. Because he is Sinbad's right-hand man. He's the main guy. Which is funny, because usually they're the first one to die in the Sinbad movies. So. Yeah. Hmm.
So how do you rank this one with the other Sinbad movies?
Out of the three Harryhausen Sinbad movies?
Yeah.
I rank it a solid second behind Seventh Voyage.
Okay.
Oh boy, does that mean we're doing Seventh Voyage?
Oh, we'll get to it.
We'll get to that in Golden eventually.
Yeah.
We have to do the Mythica movies too.
Which is the one with the Indian statue with the multiple arms?
With the multiple swords, I think, is Seventh Voyage.
Okay. And which one has Tom Baker in it?
Golden Voyage.
I love Tom Baker. He's my favorite doctor, you know.
I'm going to put it above First Kid, but lesser than Jingle All the Way.
Are you sure? Because I would at least put it even with Jingle All the Way.
I would think that was Arnold Schwarzenegger's best period, when he was like, I'm not going to do action movie. Let's just do comedy. I'm funny, right?
It's like, I have no pride left.
But he is funny, too. Arnold is funny.
He is funny. And when he had no pride, that's when he started coming back and doing more Terminator movies.
Yeah.
So when Shatner gave up on I'm a serious actor and became, like, actually got in on the joke that
was
about him.
Don't diss my Shatner.
then he became a much better person to be around. Yeah. You know, all of the all of his interviews became like a million times better.
I own his spoken word album.
Wow. Okay.
He does a duet with Henry Rollins where he's angrier than Henry Rollins.
Wow.
It's beautiful. Is that possible?
It's glorious.
Wow. You'll have to share that with me, Matt, sometime.
Yes, indeed.
I love.
So it's like you got to know your niche. You got to know what you're about.
I think eventually he did understand.
And that's Shatner or Schwarzenegger?
Both.
Okay, good.
But I meant William Shatner, who I'd really like to meet. You know.
I think the turning point might have been Batman Now and Then, or whichever one it was. George Clooney and Robin.
Ooh.
Oh, that.
Whatever happened to that actor?
George Clooney?
No, the other one.
Chris O'Donnell?
Oh, Chris O'Donnell.
Yeah, that's the one.
I don't know. Yeah, he did a bunch of Disney 90s stuff and kind of...
He ran back to TV.
But back to Sinbad. Yeah. Let's rate this movie, guys.
Are we rating already?
Yes, we're rating.
It feels like we just got started.
No, we're rating. Although
that was almost an hour ago.
Yes. Oh, okay. So Chris, on a scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces, love of my life, what would you give this movie?
I am going to give Sinbad and the Eye of the Tiger from 1977. I'm going to give it 2 gold and 8 silver.
Wow.
And that is because what is here is enjoyable, but it's pretty straightforward, but I think it could have been held together better. What about you, Sharon? On a scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces,
how do you rate it? I always rate things higher than you. Okay.
You know what? I'm gonna take that back. I'm gonna give it a solid 3. I'm gonna give it those 2 gold, 2 silvers.
I was gonna point out that it's a G-rated film, but
yeah.
Is it because of the swimming scene and James?
Oh my God! Yes. No, I'm sorry.
I'm gonna give it. I'm gonna give it 3 gold pieces and 3 silver.
Okay.
Because I love D&D. And I love fantasy movies. And it was corny and all that stuff, and it was over the top. But it was still fun to listen to as a blind person. Yeesh. I didn't mind the bad film stuff because I couldn't see it.
I didn't mind the bad film stuff either. It was like they got great actors and said, okay, this is a community theater production. Don't oversell it.
Oh my gosh. Okay. All right. Let's ask Matt.
All right, Matt, on a scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces, how do you rate Sinbad and the Eye of the Tiger? I give it
2, which is actually a worse rating for me, because one, you can at least enjoy how bad it was. This is kind of annoying how bad it was. This is which is much worse. It was like, you know, you can't really it's just
So you're saying it wasn't bad enough to be really bad.
It wasn't Troll 2 bad. It was...
Oh, my gosh.
Like, it was just like... it was like a long sigh. And, you know, I don't ever groan. I don't know how to explain that one. But,
it was...
Okay. I mean, and I know it was an act, you know, like a movie from its time. This would have been a fine matinee movie again, like on Sunday afternoons on the UHF channel.
I'm sure that's where it gets most of its...
popcorn, drinking beer.
Just... You know, it was there, you know, so I understand it was from times past, and that's why some of those things died. It was, they were not evolutionarily viable, and I don't think this movie was.
Would you like this movie if there were robots saying lines in between? I'm just, you know, I'm just throwing that out there as a hypothetical.
They can be naked robots.
They could have had puppets. They might have gotten more out of it.
I mean, like critiquing the movie as it goes along.
Mystery Science. That was a little obtuse.
Sorry.
Or I'm a little dull.
No.
That was oblique. You are obtuse. How's that?
But you know, do you think that would have made it better if it could have been?
Did they ever riff track it?
No, not yet.
I think it would be good for that.
Oh yeah. I think so. I
might have to get some rights for that though. But that would. You know, if I watched it with someone instead of alone, that might have. Yeah, because my wife had come to the room, and I wanted to like pause it so she couldn't see what I was watching. in a good porn way, right, but like in the bad, like
you should do the riff track with your wife. And so, Pete, you have to tell us on a scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces,
Yes.
What would you rate this movie?
Sharon, I'm going to match yours as 3 gold and 3 silver.
Really?
Wow, we got a tie.
I'm going to give it 3 of the solid 3 because, number one, it is one of the defining fantasies that I adore. It's over the top. It's outlandish. It's poorly put together. It's essentially a D&D adventure.
Yeah. Pete and
Sharon. And it's D&D adventure set in Greyhawk, not the Forgotten Realms.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I feel that. But, yeah.
But the 3 silver are just for lines like, be careful, she is a witch and dangerous.
Yes.
There were not a lot of memorable lines in this. And that, I guess if you're going to grab one, that's a good one.
Most of them were said by Melanthea.
This movie is not Princess Pride, okay?
It's not Princess
Pride. It's not Stardust. It's not even Excalibur with... Chris, I know I always tease you about Excalibur.
I thought it was a whole star better than Excalibur.
Oh, my God. No. Excalibur has fabulous lines. I mean, there are many, many quotable lines from Excalibur.
Merlin had many quotable lines.
It's a combination of things from which it's part nostalgia, it's part the fact that this is obviously a fantasy adventure, and it's also part of the fact that I love Ray Harryhausen. I know it's cheesy, and I know it's awful.
No, it's not.
But I've adored him ever since I saw Jason and the Argonauts.
Yeah?
Yeah,
Then I saw this, and then I saw Clash, and I was just like, you know, I didn't care that it was Dynamation. I just love the fact that he loves the genre so much that he'll bend over backwards to animate a baboon.
Yeah, I gotta say, this is a hardworking man.
It was cheaper for him to animate a baboon than it was for them to get one, train it.
Do you think?
You know, and stuff like that.
Do you think it was money? I think it was just because he wanted to show this tour de force of, you know, having a furry creature.
Oh, not at all. I think if you look in the goofs or in the trivia that mentions the fact that it was more cost effective for him to animate it than it was to try to train to hire one that was trained or to find one trained.
And I totally if I were an actor, I would like, and you want my face right next to the I don't think I'll be doing that.
I would skip that scene. Regular. Yeah.
Yeah.
So was forced to create a baboon creature.
Oh, as an actual baboon would have been hard to train.
Would have been difficult, if not impossible, to train.
Okay, I see. Yeah. Okay.
So, but the fact is that they were so married to the fact that Cassian becomes a baboon that he animated one.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I mean, it would have been useful. He becomes a dog. Oh, that was easy.
Yeah. No, that would be so easy. That would be incredible. It might even be easier to do that with like a bear or a wolf, you know, but it not.
Yeah, but but that wouldn't have fit.
Look, they turned him into a chimpanzee. Yes.
If the dog was playing chess, I would have been impressed. I mean, that no hands. That's 10 times more impressive than a baboon playing chess.
Well, you see, seeing as I play weekly against a bear at chess,
oh my God.
It would have been so much easier to use the bear in that situation.
So, Mr. Dudley, what is our next movie?
Let's let Matt pick.
Oh, okay.
Matt pick.
That's scary. Okay, do we want good movies or do we want bad movies?
It doesn't matter. We just want fantasy movies.
Fantasy movies. one you're sentimental about, one you want to pick on, whatever.
Okay, have you guys ever done The Prestige?
No.
That there is one of the finest movies ever made, and it's a fantasy movie.
I'll go with that.
That's for sure.
I can't wait to sit down and watch it again.
Batman versus Wolverine.
I think that's a great pick, Matt.
And Black Widow, and villain from Iron Man 3, and Gollum slash villain from Black Panther, and David Bowie. Like, other than a superhero movie, this has more superheroes per capita than anything.
Wow.
It really does.
David Bowie, who is a superhero, or was a superhero in real life, and was supposed to be in Guardians of the Galaxy 2, but, you know, died.
He plays a superhero in Nikola Tesla.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of the most that's the movie that Nolan should be known for, in my opinion.
Yeah.
All right.
So let's do it, guys.
There's 3 parts to every trick. All right.
And until then.
I got your Prestige right here. Rebecca Hall, is that who we were talking about?
That's the word, yes.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Who's great. It's a great actress whose name I never remember.
Yeah. All right. Well, then we'll come back and do that one. All right. And thank you for staying with us. Listen to the more information over the credits at the end. And until next time.
He's done his work.
Keep it real.
Thanks for staying with us to the end of the episode. If you enjoyed this show, please go to iTunes and or Stitcher and give us a good review. That'll let us know what you think and also help other people find the show. Dragon Reel would love to hear from our listeners. You can email us at dragonreelpodcast@gmail.com and follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/dragonreel. Join us on Twitter at twitter.com/dragonreel. If you want to comment directly on any episode of Dragon Reel, go over to our website, dragonreel.com, and leave us a comment. You can also give your rating of the movie yourself on our scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces. You know, the best way to enjoy the episode is to watch the movie with us, so while you're at our website, click our Amazon links to get your copy of the movie. If you go to Amazon from our site, you can buy anything on Amazon, and they will give us a few copper pieces to keep our show going. Our music is by Maggie Sansone and is used with permission. You can find this music and much more at maggiesmusic.com. Please join us again next episode.